This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Thomas is not going to be happy that she missed a piece of bumper music from Eddie Money. She's a fan of Eddie Money, the late Eddie Money, we should say. We have audio cut of the day before the hour is up. I found a piece that was in the Free Press the other day by a guy by the name of Mike Pesca, who's going to join us here. He's the host of something called The Gist Podcast. But the story's about a police shooting that's relatively non-traditional. A lot of nuance to this one. Mike's going to unpack it for us here this afternoon on 97.1 FM Talk. Mike Pesca, how are you this afternoon? Welcome to the show.
I'm well. Thanks for having me on.
Let's hear first and foremost about Mike Pesca. Shame on me for not being familiar, but you do a lot of things, right? You even do some sports stuff, haven't you?
Yeah. How dare you not having heard of me?
I
my
know.
God, I've
Sorry.
Got to fire my PR guy. I was a reporter for about 10 years with NPR, National Public Radio, huge rival of KMOX, I know. And then I worked for a place called Slate for about 9 years. And there I started hosting The Gist, which was the first ever, it's the longest running news and analysis podcast. That's my day job. I do The Gist every day. And we talk mostly about news, but other things. And then I left Slate and started doing it on my own, and I write for another number of places, and now I'm happy enough to be on with you.
That's awesome.
Full circle.
Are you based in New York? Where are you?
Yeah, I live in Brooklyn.
Awesome.
Where this incident that we're talking about occurred.
Well, yeah, let's get to this. This happened when? It was last year, or was it the year before?
September of last year.
Okay. There's a shooting that occurs in a subway station in Brooklyn. And the shooters were members of the NYPD, as you've written. But the story that gets out there in the media, in the New York Times, isn't exactly an accurate representation of what happened that day, is it?
No, and no one was killed in this shooting. And so maybe it didn't go national in the way a lot of other shootings, especially New York City policing incidents do, or, of course, Ferguson. Policing incidents also go national. But in the shooting, what happened was a man enters the subway. His name is Darrell Mickles, and cops confront him and essentially say, leave. So he beat the fare or tried to evade the fare. He leaves. He comes back a couple minutes later. And in between leaving and coming back, cops looking at a closed CCTV see that he has a knife, and not just a knife, an exposed blade. He has it out. So he comes back again right in front of cops, goes back into the subway again, once again evades the fare. He has this knife. The two police officers confront him, not extremely aggressively, but they are clear, drop the knife. He refuses, drop the knife. They say drop the knife or an equivalent 38 times. At different points, he says, you're going to have to shoot me. He says, mutters, I'm going to kill you. You're going to have to shoot me. He goes onto a train car, off of a train car. The train has come, and this whole confrontation took place on a subway platform. The cops keep instructing him to drop the knife. He won't. They tase him. The tasing doesn't work. He tears out the tasers.
Wow.
Now, at this point, he's on a subway station. They've told him 38 times to drop the knife. They have tased him, so they've tried non-lethal force, and he still has the knife. And at one point, he charges at one of the cops. The cops shoot him in the stomach. The bullets, because the cops, and I do criticize the policing tactics, and it's very hard, and I've never been a policeman, but they're standing on opposite sides of him. So when one shoots, turns out the other cop, his fellow officer, gets shot. But so do two onlookers. One is variously reported as grazed or a little more serious. in the leg. She's going to be fine. And then an innocent bystander is also shot in the head. Unclear if it's a ricochet or what happens. He's going to survive, but it was when you're shot in the head, it's a very serious injury.
Well, yeah, so you can say, I think what I hear there is you can argue that the officers certainly had justifiable reason to fire their weapon at the dude with the knife, but they didn't really do it in a safe way, which is maybe a basic of training.
Yes, policing tactics would tell you that if you're going to fire upon someone, and by the way, this is very, very rare in New York, the NYPD has been tracking firearm discharges for decades. And, you know, the year I was born in the 1970s, there were 3,000, almost 3,000 firearm discharges. Last year, there's something like 75. It very rarely happens, and not all discharges result in a death or even a serious injury, if you could believe that. But yeah, they weren't positioned well. That was poor policing, but it was, they did try to tase him. He does come out of the subway car. It was difficult for them, but yes, that was quite imperfect policing.
Right. So that night, even when this is happening, you got a bunch of activists that surround the police precinct there, and they say that the way that they spin this is the NYPD committed a mass shooting in the subway. That's the way that they're selling that, the protesters, correct?
Right. Social media gets that claim out there. And it is true that New York City has been having a lot of problems in the subway. More murders last year. They tied a record. In a couple months after this would happen, a homeless woman is set on fire by a Guatemalan immigrant in the subway. And there were, and I'm sure this got out to you in St. Louis, there were people who were being pushed onto the subway.
Oh, sure.
Tracks. Yeah, the public was clamoring for something to be done. And I didn't even mention fare evasions. And fare evasions happen, and they rob the system of $300 to $400 million a year. We don't even know quite how much, because once fares are evaded, you can't quite count them. So the mayor, the governor, everyone is talking about and actually implementing more policing in the subways. So here is, and I think maybe some of the protesters didn't understand or were perhaps in good faith, because if it was true, and this is what they were saying, that because of fare evasion, four people were shot, including two innocent bystanders, yeah, that would be pretty appalling, right?
Right, right,
I'd want to do a story on that. But that wasn't the story. As I said in my article for the Free Press, it wasn't the case that a man was shot for fare evasion. It was the case that a knife-wielding man who refused to drop the knife, who happened to have evaded a fare, was shot. And if this guy went into the subway and paid his fare, the second time, he still would have been confronted by police because they knew him and they knew that he had a knife. This whole thing would have gone down as it went down, but the fare evading part of it might not have caught fire with the public and led to mass protests and dozens of arrests and, you know, tumult that is not even being reckoned with properly to this day.
But what I really am interested in beyond that, and that you address here, Mike Pesca is here, he hosts a podcast called The Gist, is the way the New York Times handled this story. Because I highlight media bias quite a bit. It happens almost every day. You indicate that the Times has run 7 stories. In none of those stories in the headlines have they mentioned the word knife. And I love the fact that even, you know, when some of this stuff was investigated, one of the headlines was, one hop turnstile, 9 police bullets, 4 people shot, does it add up? But nothing indicates, you know, that the dude had a knife at all.
Yeah, and the answer to that headline, it doesn't add up because you're not putting in the most important factor.
Right.
The reason that it happened. And that story wasn't done in the direct aftermath. It wasn't done in the fog of war when people don't know exactly what's going on. And the stories that were done got the names of witnesses wrong, got facts wrong. But those things happen. I excuse those facts. And I'm talking about the New York Times. This article, and the only reason I wrote the article for the Free Press, because I had been covering the incident, this article ran on March 3rd. So this article ran months and months later, and they had all this time to dedicate all these resources, and they interviewed all these people, and the headline is still, one hop turnstile, 9 police bullets, 4 people shot, does it add up? Subhead, New York subway has been flooded with patrols to prevent crime and stop fare evasion. One Sunday in Brooklyn, it all went wrong. How from that headline, that subhead, engagement with that, and I also talk about the local public radio station and the national public radio station, and the BBC, if you are what I am, a person who wants to be fair-minded, wants to be civically informed, doesn't want terrible policing where they shoot people for no reason, how are we supposed to come to the right conclusion?
Yeah, see, that's the point here.
Of our journalism.
Right, and that's really, you make a great point of this, because there was no, here's how he writes it, there was no chance, virtually no chance for a conscientious New Yorker to get an accurate story about the Daryl Nichols incident if their media diet consisted of the New York Times, public radio, and their aligned social media feeds and affiliates, which pretty much everyone does. And you know, I think what's even more important here is you're not claiming the police don't deserve some criticism here. But see, this is where I talk about media bias a lot, where it's biased by omission. There are facts that are important here and relevant to the cases, which sometimes the editors, the reporters leave out, and they're very important and germane to the narrative. And that really is misleading.
A headline is supposed to get attention, but also convey the most important, the most salient aspects of a story, right? We can agree that's what the headline is for. Maybe if you're a terrible tabloid, the headline's supposed to trick you. But when your station, when my show, when we do headlines, what's the most important thing? And if you never put knife in the headline, you're just robbing the public of the chance to make proper conclusions.
Well, which is, I guess, what I would argue they do on a regular basis, Mike Pesca, unfortunately. Before I let you go, by the way, great conversation. Thank you so much. What's your overall, do you have an overall thought right now on just the way things are going in Washington? I know that's a pretty broad question, given the nature of where we are. But with Doge, et cetera, I was never, just to give you a little background, I was never a Trump guy in 2015. Didn't think it was a good idea a couple years ago. Probably was more in the DeSantis camp. Certainly came around because I didn't see anyone else that could do the job. And I like the start that they're off to right now. I mean, there's certainly some questions. You've had this kerfuffle the last couple of days with intelligence. But thoughts overall, how would you rank this administration off to a start?
Yeah, I come from a different perspective. I told my listeners I've never done an endorsement, but I can't endorse Donald Trump. I did endorse Kamala Harris. My three big issues were January 6th, and Ukraine was a giant one. I was probably wrong on the third one, which is what would happen with wokeness and the backlash about political correctness. But here's what I think, what I wonder about, what I'm reporting on. Does political gravity still matter? Does it hold? Because a normal politician would say, have his approval take a hit, or have Wall Street tell him this isn't going well, or maybe lose many, many cases in court, although I'll put an asterisk on that. Plenty of politicians lose in court. But normally you would say, once you become so much less popular, you're going to tack, right? And that's what happened with the tariffs the first time around. And so I wonder how committed he is to what I think is a really bad policy that will hurt a lot of people, which is the tariffs. And are we just going to see an administration that says, I promise this, I'm doing no matter what? I don't know. I think that there are signs that, and we'll see if April 2nd comes and goes and what he does. But I think that there are signs that he will at least behave more or less like a normal politician in that
I agree.
The public.
Yeah. And look, we would agree, I'm very concerned about the tariffs. So, you know, on that particular topic, I do have a fair amount of concern, especially given the nature of where the economy is and whether or not we you know head into negative growth, et cetera. But did you wait just a second? I'm not going to correct. Did you endorse Kamala Harris? Did you say?
I did.
Oh, because Mike.
I am so upset about what's going on in Ukraine. I took in a family of Ukrainian refugees. I don't walk around with hate in my heart for Russians or anything like that, but it is just a fact of foreign policy that if you don't do something with Putin, he's going to do a lot to expand his reach. And I don't think that this is the right way to do it.
Well, we're going to have to agree. Yeah, we'll have to agree to disagree on that particular point with Kamala. By the way, I don't dismiss your concerns about Ukraine either. You know, a lot of these things right now are very complicated. Mike, I'm going to check out the podcast. Thank you so much. It's called The Gist. We'll have you back. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot.